Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
Nora! What's the matter, Nick?
It isn't true.
What isn't true?
Shh. Pinch me.
Why?
Pinch me. It is true. We're alone. No family, no friends, no reporters, no police, no nothing. Good.
I suppose we ought to decide where we're going.
Why, do you care?
No. But I haven't any clothes.
Well, what's the difference? Save you the trouble of packing. And I don't need anything in the world, darling, but you. And a toothbrush. What's that? Looks like a baby's sock.
And you call yourself a detective?
Why, Mrs. Charles.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pod Shots. I am your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 1936 film, After the Thin Man. The film was written by Francis Goodrich and Albert Hackett, and directed by W.S. Van Dyke. And this is the second of the six Thin Man films, based on the Dashiell Hammett novel. The film stars William Powell and Myrna Loy, and here to discuss the film with me is returning guest Mr. David A. Price.
Hello, everybody.
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. Mr. Price, on a Friday evening, what do you have for me drink-wise?
My plan was to, based on our topic, intentions to be sipping on an old fashioned tonight.
Yes.
But I haven't really been feeling all that great. My stomach's bugging me and I don't want to, have any surprises. So I am just enjoying a nice glass of, Toasted Head barrel aged Cabernet Sauvignon.
That's nice. A little red wine. That'll warm the belly up a little bit.
Yeah, I think
right?
So.
Yeah, all right.
Hit the spot.
You know, I was thinking while I was watching it, too, I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll have a martini. Maybe I'll have just some gin and just sip on some gin or something. I can't typically – I don't really enjoy the martinis without the olives, and the olives are not a good recording option. So I was like, maybe I should not just chew on olives the whole time while I'm talking to David. So I went with, I have some New Amsterdam vodka, which was on sale, and a little bit of spicy V8. So it's like a not quite a Bloody Mary, but in that ballpark. And it's kind of our winter drink. Like it's sort of got a little heartiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we typically have been going with this, during the cold season. I was going to go with a little, Ménage à Trois, I think it was Velvet. I think it was the red blend, that I bought today. But we've kind of got a rule to where I don't open the wine if my fiance is not here. So,
yes.
Okay. You know what I mean? It's like, how dare you open that bottle when I'm not here? So, okay. So with the drink roll call finished, I think we're ready to begin our discussion of the 1936 film After the Thin Man.
For a man after living in a place like this for 3 days, I don't know.
Darling, you don't need mystery. You got something much better, something more alluring.
What?
Me.
You. Year's Eve, Aunt Catherine.
The old battle axe?
Shut up. Excuse me, Aunt Catherine. I was talking to the dog. This is Aunt Hattie.
How are you?
Don't mumble, young man. Don't mumble.
How are you?
She's deaf.
You're telling me. You got a gun?
No.
What'd you do with it?
I never had one.
Miss Burns has a brother who has a gun.
If that little rat tries to hang anything on me,
You leave my brother out of this.
Take it easy, take it easy. That's what they want. They want to get you at each other's throats. Just answer what you want and don't let them get you.
I can't stand that shyster.
I was beginning to suspect that.
Not yet. Any complaints or suggestions?
Few. You don't scold, you don't nag, and you look far too pretty in the mornings.
Right, I'll remember. Must scold, must nag, mustn't be too pretty in the mornings.
And the plot synopsis over at IMDb goes like this. Now back in San Francisco after their holiday in New York, Nick and Nora find themselves trying to solve another mystery. It's New Year's Eve and they are summoned to dinner at Nora's elderly and very aristocratic family. There they find that cousin Selma's husband, Robert, has been missing for 3 days. Nick reluctantly agrees to look for him, but the case takes a twist when Robert is shot and Selma is accused of murder. Several other murders occur, but eventually Nick gathers everyone in the same room to reveal the identity of the killer. Okay, so, David, when we were discussing what film we should do next, you had offered up not The Thin Man, but After The Thin Man. Tell me about that choice, and I'll get into why it was such a shaming choice for me.
Before I met the woman who became my wife, I never really got too into a lot of the older classics. I didn't have anything against black and white movies. They weren't always around me when I was growing up. And, one of our favorite cable channels is Turner Classic Movies. So,
yes.
Every Saturday night they have what they call the essential, and, the host, Robert Osborne, he'll, have a celebrity. It's been Alec Baldwin. It's been Drew Barrymore. It's been any number of people over the years, and someone will pick a movie, and sometimes there are repeats just because there are so many movies out there that are just considered great. And most Saturday nights you may see a Thin Man movie, you may see Casablanca, you may see The Big Sleep or anything, but it was one night where Renee basically was like, oh, okay, The Thin Man's on. I love William Powell and Myrna Loy. So, I knew nothing about them or about this series. And instantly I was just blown away. I absolutely was fascinated. I couldn't look away. The writing, the chemistry between the two leads, it was obviously it was another time, but I was hooked. And over the years we've seen all six through various times. Sometimes we'll do a marathon, sometimes we'll just be, you know, I'm in the mood to see that one, and we'll watch any one of the six, but I enjoy the entire series. I enjoy some more than others. The first movie is great. I really do enjoy it, but the first sequel, After the Thin Man, that one, and the fourth, another Thin Man, are my two favorites. The reason why I wanted to do After the Thin Man was when we were originally planning you and I to talk about this, it was closer to the beginning of the year, and After the Thin Man takes place begins on New Year's Eve. And I just, Jimmy Stewart is a fairly known actor, and I don't know how many of your listeners would have ever seen him in this movie or play the character he actually is in right, this movie. Yeah. So there's just a few things. And the whole thing, I mean, and Myrna's family, Nick's in-laws that he has to go see. And it's just, there's just, it's, you don't need to see the Thin Man before you see this to get caught up and get a feel for everybody. But I just think that it's the second movie. It's not like the Thin Man was the first movie that Powell and Loy did together. They worked well together even before the Thin Man series. So it's not like they had to get to know one another. But I just think that After the Thin Man was pretty much where everything kind of just gelled and was really, really good. Sure. And because the movies alternate and they're either on the East Coast or they're back out in California. I love, Sam Levine as Lieutenant Abrams. He even though when they're back in New York and there's the lieutenant, the detective that Nick usually works with on the East Coast, Levine is just absolutely fantastic. So in this and in the fourth movie, I enjoy the interaction between him and Nick.
Hmm. Yeah, like you had mentioned, we were planning on doing this a little while ago. It seemed like there was every conceivable thing that was going up. I was sick. I had some car problems one week, and there's a whole bunch of different things that had happened. And you're right. This would go together with the beginning of the new year, and Turner Classic Movies, I believe, is who it was that had the marathon on New Year's Eve. And so that was, they were playing all of them. And I remember mentioning to you, like, oh, you know, I get to see as many as I want to see. Like, that's pretty awesome. And the reason it was shameful for me was, you know, The Thin Man was one of the movies that, of course, I knew of. I was aware of. And I knew about Nick and Nora. But I hadn't seen, and I was like, oh, David, like, you gotta call out one of the films I've yet to see, and it's like considered a classic and all this. And, it might well have been, Casablanca or something like that, where I was like, oh shit. You know, it was tough to say, oh yeah, that's a good pick, because I probably should have seen that, right? I probably should be aware of that movie. So I watched the first one and this one and a few of the others. And I don't remember the other ones as clearly. This one I've watched a couple of times since. And so I don't know. I guess getting into the actual film, like, I really enjoyed this. Like, I really enjoyed the series as a whole. But I think you're right. This one has something a little bit different about it to where things just seem a little more effortless. Like, it just seems like they know what they're doing and they don't have to try as hard, I guess. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was we start the movie and it's a little bit of a discussion on celebrity, because they get off the train and they're, you know, oh, well, man, that was a real, you know, that was a real tough case. And I can't believe, you know, we've been spending all this time on this train and that kind of a setup. And then they get off and they're damn near mobbed by all of these people. And I'm like, oh, well, that's a little bit of a look as to what it's like to be an actor or an actress or someone that is doing their job. And then they have a little bit of a break. And then it's, you know, everyone's aware of it then. Or even comic book people, to where it's like you do your job and then 3 months later the book comes out. And then all of a sudden they're kind of mobbed by all these people. And what I really liked about it is just the way that Nick takes everything, and especially this, just in stride and isn't overwhelmed ever. And, you know, I think it's pretty it goes without saying for anyone that's seen the films that the dialogue is just absolutely fantastic, and the way that the two main leads perform it, and the little snide comments that they have, and just the sarcasm that they use, and those sorts of things, are just things that you would never guess is from a 1936 film. You know, I mean, when you think about it, that to where this is 6 years before World War II, I mean, that's just mind-boggling to me, to where the age of the film, when you watch it, because it definitely doesn't play like that.
True.
You know, it doesn't play like a quote-unquote old movie, you know?
Yeah, it could be timeless. I mean, the themes are pretty much, you may not have to, the whole kept woman aspect. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's something that, you know, people still deal with today, but there's just little things like, and it really isn't anything that, like other movies at that time, it's not like there's anything really blatantly racist. No one is, like Dancer's lieutenant, his right hand man, you know, I mean, if they were going to make a movie like that these days, then with his, Asian descent, definitely things would be pointed at or mocked. And it's just, everybody is just, what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. Nobody is acting like any sort of character. Nobody is playing a stereotype. It's just, sure. It's smart. It's not talking down to the audience. You're able to get everything. I mean, there may be situations that you're not aware of. I mean, I'm not somebody who, you know, lives in a house like Myrna's cousin and has to put up with, you know, what her husband's doing. I don't have to know what her life is like to put myself in her shoes and realize that, you know, she's just trying to, save her marriage. And then, you know, here's this poor schlub who just is waiting and would do anything for her. And again, I mean, I'm don't know if we're going to spoil anything.
Oh, but yeah. Absolutely spoil it.
It's just one of those things where, you understand where he's coming from and it's all just, you know, poor David throughout all of it. You're just like, man, why doesn't Selma just see what she has? He's right here, but you get to the last few minutes of the movie. And that's the other thing is that, you know, the thin man, as you found out that, there are times where even Nick, it's a whodunit, but Nick may not know whodunit until he gets all the suspects together. And that's the first movie. If we did talk about that one, it would be for the dinner scene at the end where he is, you know, where they, Nick and Nora have lines where, she'll ask the waiter, you know, to serve the nuts. And she's like, will you please serve the guests the nuts? And, but it's, their relationship is very much like the relationship I have with my wife where, it's, they're sarcastic to one another. They're not rude, but they, you know, if you were a stranger overhearing the conversation, you would think that, these two people may not necessarily are all that fond of each other, but, it could be further from the truth. But the, as far as after the thin man, there's, the way it's, I'm not sure why it's, I keep, and I was mistaken. It wasn't after another Thin Man is the third movie, Shadow of the Thin Man, because it's been bugging me. And that was another one where, you know, we had Jimmy Stewart in After the Thin Man, and you end up with, you know, like Donna Reed in the fourth movie. So it's another one where you see people and you're like, I remember them.
Like, oh, hey, yeah, look at this.
imagine them showing up. From the start, of the movie where, like you said, they get off the train and, it was a little weird for me because Nick being the detective, I thought that he was a New York based detective. And, so that's where most of his celebrity would be. But it's, you know, it's, I guess there wasn't much going on back then. So therefore, you know, news
California is a pretty quiet place.
You know, yeah. It's like, hey, Nick's coming home and it's, and he marries into, and you find things out. It's not, we don't need an origin story. We don't need, we don't need their time where they met and married playing behind the credits. You just, you know, they, as they're talking, you realize he married her. She's the one who's loaded.
Yes.
She is, she's the one from high society. And he is, you know, like as they're driving back to the house, they're seeing their friends. He's seeing a bunch of his friends. They're either newsies or they're, you know, just not bums, but, you know, dude, right? And, you know, the guy who's going to be a boxer. And then, you know, they're driving past and there's a dude in a top hat and a woman with a stole. And he says, oh, who's that? She goes, oh, you wouldn't know them. They're respectable. And it's just, and so, you know where they were class wise.
Mm-hmm.
And, but she obviously saw something in him. He swept her off her feet. And it's, it really is just a great pairing. And it doesn't matter what the movie could have been about. Just me watching William Powell and Myrna Loy, they could just sit in a chair facing each other reading the phone book and I would be absolutely in love with it.
So are you trying to tell me that in a sequel, you don't need to see mom and dad killed in an alley and the whole why?
And the pearls falling.
You don't need to see the pearls and why Nick decided to become a flatfoot. You don't need to see that every movie or ever.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. If they are actually, if this story is well written, the characters can actually say the lines with conviction and make you believe what they are saying and what they are doing, then just by a few sentences that's taking place in a crowded room, you will be up to speed and know everything about the people involved.
Yeah, I felt like I was watching this and they so quickly in the first film and in this one, but they so quickly make me believe that they are real people.
Yeah.
Because of the way that they read the dialogue. Now I feel like, and I'm really trying not to get into modern movies are terrible because I think some modern movies are really good.
Yes, they are.
Right. Yeah. But now I see people and I know that they are acting in quotes.
Yes.
That I don't feel like they are the people that they are impersonating. And I don't know that that's because I'm more aware of who all of the actors are now as opposed to 1936, because I don't know, you know, the individual actors' own personalities from this film, you know, compared to how Nick and Nora are or something. I don't know if that makes a difference or not. But I just really, you know, enjoyed the way that they talk to each other. And like you were saying about you and Renee, I mean, that's the dream, right? Like, that's the goal, to have people talk the way that Nick and Nora talk to each other.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they can be serious at times. They can joke around the majority of the time, but you still know that they love each other.
Yeah.
Right? And that's, I mean, sort of what the objective is, I would think. I mean, that's the way you should want to live the rest of your life, even though I don't know if you're going to send off Renee to jail and that sort of thing, and just to be funny.
she, I think she would do that to me before I would do it to her. But at the same time, she would also probably scream out if someone started brandishing a weapon and was getting ready to fire it, and she would get caught up in the melee trying to save me.
Who would be the one in front of the cousin just hanging out? Like, there's a gun pointed at the cousin. One's just like, you can just shoot me in the back. It's cool.
I'm good. Don't worry about it. It's, yeah, it's, they're almost the, they're kind of the barometer. That's the scale. Here's William Powell and Myrna Loy, who were never romantically involved. They were with other people during the time they were making their movies. They were just really, really very good friends. But I believed that they were honestly husband and wife while watching their movies. And on the flip side, you have, say, Robert Pattinson and Kirsten Stewart, who were a real life couple.
Yes.
And in any of the Twilight movies, it looked like they could not stand one another, and they're supposed to be a couple.
What I love about that is in my classes in high school, I will frequently talk about what garbage the Twilight series is. Mm-hmm. And so I love that it's just brought up on in reference to this movie as well about how
and it's probably the only time you will ever hear the Twilight saga in the same conversation as a Thin Man movie.
Oh, that's really funny. One of the other things that I really liked here at the beginning of the movie was they get to their house and they're talking about, oh my God, I'm so tired. They're just going to take the
phone. Sleep for a week?
Yeah, they're going to take the phone off the hook, all of that. And they walk in and there's a party going on in their house. And they're like, what is going on? And the first person they meet is somebody that doesn't realize who they are. Mm-hmm. And so they're playing along with it, of course. And they're just kind of dancing around and just trying not to be noticed. And it's just that type of charm that the film like this has where they don't get all upset and freak out and swear and all this sort of thing when things don't go their way. They just kind of put a smile on their face and play along and make the best out of situations. And I just really thought that that was nice. They get in, you know, they get in the kitchen and then the kitchen staff, of course, recognizes them. But I thought it was interesting how, you know, you're going by and they're listening in on these conversations and you got guys doing handstands. You got guys doing, talking about drinking all of the good booze and all of this thing, which was a nice reaction. And, you just have all of this going on, which again, being a high school English teacher, reminds me of walking around while the kids are supposed to be working on something and you hear all of these different asinine conversations and you're like, wait a minute, like what are you talking about right now? Like you're supposed to be doing something and you're just talking about the strangest things, and in this party the people are doing and talking about just completely random things and nobody's paying attention to or caring that the fact that, you know, that the hosts aren't there. And it's almost like that Hollywood lifestyle to where you're so famous that no one actually really knows you personally. Mm-hmm. Like they know of you and they know maybe where you live and that you're going to have a party or, and that they're going to surprise them or whatever, that they know that that's where the party is to be at. But nobody actually personally knows them. And that was again a little thing where I thought they were talking about celebrity just touch, which was one of those things where as a viewer, I can read into, like, oh, maybe they're making some sort of slight commentary on something, but then they couldn't, you know, be not doing that just as well. They could be talking about nothing. They could be commenting on nothing, but that's what I get out of it, and I enjoy the fact that I can interpret something into it, as opposed to it being so very blatant that they're saying this, that, or the other, or saying nothing in the case of some action films that are, you know, more recent, where they're not saying anything other than look at the explosions.
Uh-huh.
So, but I really like that. I do want to talk about Nora's family in that sequence. Like you had mentioned, and the plot synopsis mentioned, she's very wealthy. She goes over, at the behest of her cousin to talk to her and figure out what's going on. And I really like that Nick is not welcome there because we just got through with hearing about how famous he is and what a good detective he is and all of this kind of thing. And he's this kind of hotshot, but here's this family of his that doesn't enjoy his company because he's a wise ass and because he's of a different social class and he's not welcomed there. And I love the way that he realizes that and plays off of it.
Oh yes.
You know, I love I want to say that my favorite character is the butler, is the very old man, the very wobbly old
this
man.
This way.
Yeah, walk this way. Well, I'll try. That thing, and then later when the police detective is questioning him, he keeps falling over. that's just funny. Like that's good. That's just the sort of thing that makes me laugh without it having to be overly crass. Yeah,
they're not abusing the old man. Mm-hmm. He is an old man. It's played for laughs, but it's not, nobody's getting hurt. Nobody is mocking anyone. Abrams is a loud in-your-face type guy. So this elderly dude, who probably has to put, I mean, it's not like, he doesn't live in a very, or he doesn't work in a serene place. I mean, you have here's Selma,
sure,
who is, you know, putting up with her husband. The husband's coming in and out, but Aunt Catherine has to just be the most stubborn and
just a miserable person.
Set in her ways, yes. And it's like I can't imagine the sun ever shining in her world. Mm-hmm. But so the poor dude is. I'd be hunched over too. It's just, even being younger than him, it wouldn't be a very sane and healthy environment. So yeah, for Abrams to be in his face or for Nick to, you know, take the shot and, you know, and it's not like he was making fun of the guy. He was just like, listen, yeah, I'll try. It's that old Monty Python, so, you know, walk like this. And it's, which obviously this was before Monty Python's time, but he was fantastic. I thought he was great.
I think my favorite bit with him is the throwing the jacket on his arm.
Oh,
he almost falls over.
He's gotta be brought back over.
Oh, that was really good. That was so funny. So we have the conversation, you know, the Norris family is going on and on, and we get kind of the plot is introduced really at this point. And I do like that Nick is sort of shoved off with all of the husbands. And it's, you know, it's a sequence where he's not really involved that much. You know, we're trying to figure out what's going on. And we find out, you know, that the cousin isn't really able to be her own person, really.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that Selma is kind of held under the thumb of her mother, and, you know, Robert's this guy who does whatever he wants, and it's sort of okay as long as he ends up coming back and that kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, you know, here we're getting into, you know, a little bit more serious, a little bit plot driven, and Nora wants her husband, and we see Nick, and this was the sequence that I laughed the most in, and I just thought it was so, like, silly, but made me laugh so hard. And Nick is in at the dining table talking with all of the husbands, and they're all fast asleep, snoring. And it's a wonderful chance. Now, I don't know if all of this is scripted or if any of this is improv or what, but for him to have this conversation between snoring men and just having little comments back and forth about, whoa, are you going to let him get away with that?
It's like, you don't say.
Oh, well, I haven't thought about it that way. You know, that sort of thing is just a wonderful chance to show a character's personality and is, you know, is trying to make the best out of situations.
Yeah.
To where I feel like if I was in that situation, I'd be sitting there staring at my phone, pouting and waiting, you know, just miserable.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to see someone not being sarcastic and miserable and preoccupied with other things. And he's just trying to, like, make the best out of a crappy situation. And I really like that. I really appreciate that.
Agreed.
So you had mentioned him earlier, but Jimmy Stewart is in this movie, and it's not older, well, sort of Jimmy Stewart, you know, it's like young, hey, I'm acting Jimmy Stewart. And I'm like, all right, like, look at you go. And it's, you know, it's earlier in his career, so it's James Stewart, of course. But I liked seeing him in this, and I was like, even in the beginning, I kind of liked that he was the man that was missed, or the, you know, the guy that was longing for the woman that he didn't get. And I'm like, oh, really? Okay. Well, Jimmy Stewart, that's not, you know, he's usually the leading man. He's usually the object of affection or some kind of he's a Hollywood leading man. He's not the guy that gets passed up as much.
Yeah.
In roles. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting that he's in this role. And my first watch, I was like, well, that's a really, and I'm thinking, like, that's a really big name. And I was like, well, in 1936, like, I don't know, I guess, was it? And I didn't look it up, and I purposefully didn't want to see, you know, if, oh yeah, well, he's well established at this point, so it's clear it's going to come back to something related to Jimmy Stewart, or no, this is early on in his career, so he may not have an important role at all. I wanted that to be outside of my knowledge. So nice. I was like, oh, just leave the phone down. I don't need to know that. I'm just going to watch it, right? Because, like, if you had some cameo of somebody like Robert De Niro in the late 70s or 80s or something, you'd be like, oh, well, obviously he's going to have something important coming up, because you don't have that actor in here and then not use him, you know? So I didn't want it to be something along those lines where I was like, oh, well, clearly he's going to come back. What did you think? Let me ask you about this. So we get into the nightclub and I'm loving the movie. Like, I'm enjoying every aspect of it so far. And we get into the nightclub, and that's where it started to not, that's like the bits where I don't enjoy it as much. And we're in there with Dolly. Isn't that what her name is? The singer? Polly.
Polly.
Polly, yes. So we get in there with Polly, and she's singing, and for me, like, not a great tap dancer. I was like, oh, okay, well, she's giving it a go, but man, alive, okay. And I don't know if that's with our daughter being obsessed with So You Think You Can Dance. And I'd seen the different people on there. I'm like, okay, well, that's good. And, oh, well, she's trying. Like, that's all right. That's not bad. So there's a little extra critiquing going on by me. But it's when we got into that point and we get the similar looking guys. Like, we get Robert, the husband, and we get the club owner, who looks kind of a lot like Nick. And I'm like, ugh. Like, that guy looks, you know, he's got the same mustache and stuff. And
yeah.
And I'm like, that guy kind of looks like Nick. And then we have the brother / later husband, and that whole backroom scene. And we have like a lot of plot thrown at us in this stretch. And what I didn't like about it as much was I thought that the acting duo of, at the time, this brother and sister, is they're very shrieking and very old-timey when I think of what an older movie is.
Yeah, yeah. You know? He's got her, he's holding her close. He just smacks her in the face a little bit.
And, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was, I think also it was a long stretch of time without any Nick and Nora.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it did... You know, I guess they had to have a dance number. You know, they bought the song, so they got to use it. So we'll have Polly sing it. So there was that, but it was also, I guess, to let us know where Robert is and the type of person he is. But at least it played out so that by the time we had to get Nick and Nora here, it had Dancer at the front of the place with Phil, with the husband / brother, which it doesn't sound as redneck as we're making it out to be. It was, there were some other things going on. It's not like she didn't marry her brother. But they didn't have to go out of their way. They weren't reaching to get everybody where they had to go. It was almost kind of like, you know, the type of fancy show off type director who wants to, you know, put the camera in the middle of the room and then spin the camera around. Oh, so, you know, you see. Yeah. So it just, you know, we were at the stage with the dancing, and then Dancer finds out that Phil's here, and he goes to escort him ever so gingerly out of the club, and yet here comes Nick and Nora up the stairs. So it served its purpose as far as getting all the players where they needed to be.
And that's when he says, wow, the confetti's big here.
That's true. and just by picking him up and then of course Phil gets all upset for Nick, because I got to show off now I'm a big guy again. Let me, you know, say some words to Nick as I get out of here. But, you know, just that little nonchalant, what he says to Dancer about, you know, I felt a 38 under his, you know, under his left arm. And then Dancer, without missing a beat, it's like, no, he's holding it for a friend, you know? So this way, so Dancer's not trying to throw anybody under the bus. He's not trying, because Dancer's got his own game he's playing. He's working another angle. and he doesn't want to, would the less he brings, the less attention he brings on himself, on his plan, on his place, the better. So for him just, you know, so Nick's like, yeah, the guy had a gun, and for Dancer to kind of just brush it off, it does it. They know thing. Nobody here is going to worry about it or going to get hurt. It's, we didn't, you know, nowadays they'd probably have something about, you know, we'd have to follow the gun for like another 15 minutes just to see, you know, who's going to get shot. It's one of those things where, you know, if you're bringing a gun in a story, it's got to be used before, yeah, you know, the third act or whatever. But, you know, it's just, it's, this is the world they live in. This is, you know, it's not uncommon for Nick to bump into somebody and just because of, and again, you know, this, he's a detective. So, I mean, not just witnessing everything around him, but being aware of what's going on, and which just makes it easier for him to plan things out and what to expect from the people around him.
Yeah, and I do like, I think that you're right about how it's not that the movie quality sags, it's just that Nick and Nora aren't there.
Yeah.
Is why I don't enjoy it as much. And it's one of those where I understand why it needs to be there, and I understand why they can't be there the whole time, but that doesn't make me enjoy it more.
Yes, exactly. But I want to see them. I know exactly what you mean.
I just want them to be there all the time. I do like how, you know, Dancer then is like, you know, here, sit at this table, everything's on the house, and kind of buttering him up, and then all of those guys, the yeah guys come by. Yeah, see? Those dudes are really funny. And I do think that it's clever, and I like that they don't mention it, where after Polly's performance, and then she leaves, the one guy that Nick and Nora knew, that, you know, they're wanting Polly to keep singing, and they're wanting to come over to the table, all that stuff. And they're like, we spent all this money here, and we expect to see. Oh, my God. That just struck me as fandom in general. You know, like, yes, it was free, but hey.
I deserve it.
There's this swag that we got for coming into this place, and it's not the free shit that I want it to be.
You know? I was promised singing. It doesn't matter that I got here late. It was promised to me, and I want to hear it. Never mind that everybody else already did. You're absolutely right. You're right.
Yeah, so I really like that. After this bit is when we get into some really deftly handled timing, and the plot kind of ratchets up a little bit, and we have, the robber is, you know, walking out, and there's several people that could want to have him killed. You know, Polly's got her reasons for, you know, he's supposed to get money and take off with Polly, and then Polly's brother is, you know, they're planning to kill him, and then Dancer is planning to kill the brother, and, you know, and there's like a lot of people that are planning to do all of these killings to get some money, basically. And of course we have Selma involved and Jimmy Stewart involved, and there's all of this going on, and I love the way that it cuts, and it was like, it was forcing me to pay attention because it was cutting quick enough to where I could still follow what was happening, but it was so quick to where it like forced me to follow it, you know, to follow it closely, as opposed to a modern film where it's cutting so fast I don't have a fucking clue what's happening, you know, like in an action sequence or something, to where I'm like, wait, what? Or a modern heist film where it's close-ups of, like, here's the gun, here's the money, here's a hand, here's this, here, you know, it's full frame, it's people, and it's just all building to one sequence, as opposed to it being a little more stylized, I guess. Like, we were doing, we did Snatch not too long ago, and talked about that movie, and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and about how the, you know, the film technique is very, very stylized, and it's very close up on almost everything. And I was glad that these were all kind of medium shots, to where you could see all that was happening, and you could tell what you were supposed to see and what was supposed to happen and that kind of thing. So let me ask you this, if you can recall, what did you think, who did you think originally was the person that had shot him, did you think that it was Selma, like Jimmy Stewart thinks?
I didn't think it was Selma, only because she was so, I don't want to say frazzled. She wasn't in her right mind. So, I mean, she very well could have fired the gun, but I don't think she had enough. I think she was just basically sleepwalking while awake. So I never really thought it was Selma, only because they also, they were kind of telegraphing that, and it definitely could have, it would have been very easy to believe that. I think I probably thought it was either Dancer's Muscle.
Uh-huh, the Asian man.
Yeah, who, I'll have his name right, but Lum Key. It was either Lum. I don't think it was Dancer, because Dancer never struck me as the person who actually would get his hands dirty.
Right.
He would always set up someone else to take care of it. Or it was Phil, but since Phil didn't really strike me as somebody who was in it for the long term or was going to, if it was Phil, then Phil would have gotten got and then, to clean up that mess. But I definitely didn't think it was Selma.
Yeah. Okay. Because I saw that and I was like, well, that's such a nondescript way for him to fall. I was like, does that mean that it came from, was it for sure behind him? Could it have been, because he just kind of like crumples.
Crumbled, yeah.
You know, instead of like leaning one way or the other. And so I was like, I'm going to have to Zapruder film this shit. But I was like, I don't know.
And since they never use blood, hell, he could have had a heart attack after a car backfiring. So there's no way to ever know.
That's right.
Where's the exit wound? I don't see anything.
Yeah, that's right. And so you just hear kind of a sound and then he falls over. And kind of has like a, something pinched me in the back.
Yeah, that was the worst death scene.
And so I'm just like, well, okay. But we do have this sort of complex bit of plot and you know, there's a lot of running around and trying to figure out who did what and a lot of false leads. And that's kind of the fun of it. And like I mentioned, we do get Nora in jail at one point. We do get a nice little darkened fight scene that Nick is under the table for on
that
the phone.
That was fantastic.
I was like, oh, guys, can you keep it down? Like, I'm on the phone.
and we always know, you know, after everything's done, Nick knows who ran out, what kind of weapon it was, who, and the poor little lawyer. And it's just, And Polly's right. You know, she's like, listen, you're his lawyer, not my lawyer. Yeah, whatever I say, you're not here to help me. You know, you're here to keep Dancer off.
Yeah. You know, but that was one of the worst line readings in the film. I thought I that one was so bad for me. I was like, oh no. Cause it was just, you know, with teaching that drama class, it's like, I see that so often to where it's such over exaggerated body language and voice.
Yeah.
And it's I get you're upset, but just like, come on, tone it down just a little bit.
By that point, I think they were like, listen, that one was the best one. That's
or what do they, what do they call, what do they call Van Dyke? They called him, one take Woody. I think that's what they called him. And so to where he just is like, probably like, fine. That's good.
It's just print.
Just your worst instincts. Just go with it. We'll just get one out there. And then he's like, no, that's good. Check the gate. you know, one of the other things I do really like, and this is a tangent from the plot, but I do like the way that in these films, that how people kiss. Because it's just like, it's like what I imagine my grandparents kissing.
It's
like.
Yeah. It's, I'm mushing the corner of my mouth into your cheek, but we're going to turn away from the camera at the same time.
Yep. I'm just going to press my face to your face.
That's it. I love you so much. And then, but of course it's separate beds.
Oh God. That, thank you for reminding me of that. So the separate beds, and when they finally get to go to bed and the phone off the hook and then in the drawer, and then she wakes up and is like, I could go for some scrambled eggs.
No, she asked him if he's in the mood for scrambled eggs.
That's right.
And he's like, He's like, no. He's like, she's like, oh, all right. Well, would you like me to make some scrambled eggs? No, no. But if you were going to get it, but you won't stop talking.
Yes.
And he's just like, oh, guess I'm getting up to make you some.
Oh, that is such real life for me. That was unbelievable. Because I'm just sitting there watching it. You know, and it, like I said before we started recording this morning, I mean, I don't have to get up. And every other day I'm up at 5:15. And today I don't have to wake up. And it's, hey, so later after, you know, can you go to the store? And Yeah.
I'll just text me.
Just let me text later. Okay. And well, remember, Anna's going to spend the night at my mom's today. Yeah. I got it. Yeah. Just go. Just leave me alone.
I know. Oh God.
So it's very much, I very much felt that one today with the rewatch. I was like, oh shit. That is true to life. But yes, I do really enjoy that. And it's fun because, again, they get to go to the kitchen and just have a scene of them just being together.
Yes.
You know, and I can't believe that we've gone this far without talking about the dog.
Poor Asta. This movie, I felt so bad because he's
cuckolded.
He is, but he's, and it's so, he's out traveling with mom and dad. He's the one who gets to go all over the place. He leaves mom with the kids.
Yeah.
But she's like, hey, you know, you ain't here. I still need to. And
I'm in heat, Astrid.
You know, it's like, so here's someone else's baby that you now get to raise. And then he has to chase his homeboy out, starts to fill up the hole, and then eventually puts a lawnmower in front of. I'm like, man, dude, you're savage. That's the. All right, you're not playing.
I love that they were able to get the dog to do all of those different things, though. I mean, it was pissed looking when it got its face underneath that fence.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's barking, and my cat did not enjoy the barking of the dog.
Oh, really?
It was like, because it was curled up on me, and then it was, as soon as that dog would bark, it was ears flipped around, and it was, head turned like, what the hell? You know, I don't know that it's seen a dog in its life, but it still heard the sounds.
Heard it. It's the enemy of my people. The asked his trainer, and it was Skippy was his Asta's real name.
Mm-hmm.
Skippy's trainer did not want the actors on the set to get too familiar, to get too comfortable, because the trainer wanted to make sure that Asta would still listen to him, that this way, if anything, in case Skippy couldn't tell the difference between real life and acting, and if anybody was getting hurt or there was a fight, but also that, knowing the pecking order, you know, who's the alpha male, and if Loy or Powell, started to, I guess, overextend their relationship and whether or not that might confuse. But from what one tidbit I remember Robert Osborne mentioning was that Asta actually tried to bite Myrna Loy at one time. And so she was she from what everything else that I've read and heard, you know, she had no problem with dogs, but it definitely made it easier for her to distance herself so that the trainer could do whatever the trainer needed to do.
Oh, sure. She was probably had no problems trying to chase him down in the rock sequence.
That's great. Yeah.
Isn't that fun? And that's another one where that's just like the eggs thing where I'm like, God, this is just, you know, yes, they are famous detectives. Or Nick is anyway. You know, I don't know how much attention Nora gets, but I like that they're still dealing with like everyday people type stuff. I'm like, oh my God, give me the frickin' rock. You know, give me the notes. Come over here. Well, you sit over here. I'm going to sneak up behind you. You know,
and yeah, that went well.
All of that kind of stuff, you know, and it's like, we'll go through things that are, similar to that, where I'll be sitting and trying to do homework or lesson plan or something, and Annelle will be sitting near me, and she's trying to get the cat up near on her, and of course he comes and sits on my laptop. And I'm like, get out of here. Like, go. She wants you 2 feet from me. Go over there. You know, and he didn't get it, so. Whatever. But that was another thing, Norm. It was just kind of a charming sequence that I really enjoyed. Let's get towards the end here, and we have the sort of Thin Man staple of having them all in one room together, right?
Yes.
And I do like, again, that, like you said last time, it was the dining room table. This time it's just, you know, an apartment. And I like that that Nick does say, like you had mentioned, well, we're just, you know, he doesn't really know what he's doing. He's just going to see if someone will slip. He's just going to get them all in the room and figure out what's going on. And we have the sort of forgeries that I was like, oh shit, is that having something to do with it? And I like that that wasn't a big mystery really. Like that some of the things tie together into the murders and some of the things are just, you know, other crimes that have also happened.
Yes.
And I like that to where it's like, oh, it's a little messier than I would expect a movie that is, you know, almost 80 years old. Which is unbelievable that it would, you know, it came out almost 80 years ago. And I would expect it to be much more neat and tidy than
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Much cleaner.
Yeah. And I like the fact that it wasn't. And so we have, you know, we have the room full of people and I love that it's an Aunt Catherine. Isn't that what her name is? I love that, you know, even she's there and, even the doctor with the crazy glasses.
Oh God, yeah. And again, never knew who the doctor was, but you know that, and not that that's one instance where I think you could judge a book by its cover, because you definitely, I mean, well, the name alone. And again, like you said, it's before World War II, so it's not like, you know, oh, the Nazis, but he definitely looks shady.
Yes.
But all Abram says is, I've seen this guy before. Every time he's working for the defense, telling the jury that the suspect is crazy. And it's like, so, okay, so this is why he's here, because Catherine wants to keep the family name clean and there's no way we would be involved in a murder, but maybe my niece is a little off a rocker. And it just brings this dude in who normally would just be, yeah, he's the doctor or whatever, but they give him a bit of a backstory over the course of two sentences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you have, you have him in the room, but yeah, like the first movie, you know, Nick kind of, luckily stumbles into what really clinches it and that's the light bulb moment, because before then, even though they all met in Anderson's apartment, but I thought the whole ladder thing with the pipes, I thought that was pretty freaking clever.
Yeah, really.
And Nick accidentally, unbeknownst to him, but when he realizes that the room upstairs was used to spy on the room below, mm-hmm. and he puts the box and the floorboard back. Unfortunately, when he does that, the plaster from the ceiling falls down and hits Dancer's hat, who was in Polly's apartment to find out the cigarette case, the matchbook, whatever he was looking for to clear himself and to make things tidy on his end. And then of course going upstairs or finding out someone's upstairs, and then there's the shootout and Nick narrowly escaping with his life.
He shoots it out and shoots the lock off of the suitcase or whatever it was. Wow, that is a good shot.
That is an awesome shot. So I'm not going to shoot you, but I'm going to throw this dead guy at you. And, which of course ends up somehow miraculously that person is connected to Myrna and her family.
Yeah, and that's like one of the big reveals.
Yeah, because like the person who plays his hand, he remembers someone who – he remembers how someone looked when he last saw them, mm-hmm. not when he says he last saw him.
You know, and let's you know, shout out the gardeners of the world. I mean, it's not an easy job, and they're basically talking about how no one – will remember you in this movie. Say no one will remember you for being a gardener, because Nick doesn't remember. Nora does.
Nor does.
Yeah, but Nick doesn't remember who the guy is, and then we have Jimmy Stewart's character who identifies him wrongly by what he looks like now as opposed to what he used to look like, which is the big tip-off that for Nick's character, or for William Powell's character, that in fact it is Jimmy Stewart is the one who has been behind things and the killer. And he delivers a wonderful, like, crazy Jimmy Stewart sort of performance at the end.
Oh, there. Yeah. The eyes like, twitching.
Yeah. I was like, wow, he's really crazy now. And I really like that because normally I kind of give Jimmy Stewart a hard time because of his whole oil thing, you know. And whether it was, you know, either It's a Wonderful Life or, shit, I can't remember the one that we did. This is probably why, but I can't remember the movie that he did with the rabbit.
Oh, the Harvey.
Harvey, thank you. I was like, that one we did live at a brewery, so maybe that's why I can't remember which one it was. Because that was a long night. But
he was Elwood.
Yes, yes. And so that was one where he was really sort of drawing things out. And I somewhat recall doing a lot of Jimmy Stewart impressions that night. But
you don't say.
Yeah, oh yeah. And so, yes, so Jimmy Stewart ends up being the killer, and we have the whole reveal that, you know, is sort of justifiably, he's tired of waiting around. Like, you know, he was true to Selma, and she, you know, liked Robert better. And so he kind of got screwed out of that deal, and you know, he, basically ended up hating them both, and as one of them both dead and was going to kill them both.
Yeah, but well, yeah, if he couldn't kill them both, then at least he could send one up the river for killing the other, and appropriate that's where he tossed the gun that was never fired. So yeah, so he obviously it's which is why you feel bad for him at the beginning, but you definitely can see why he would. It doesn't make it right, but you kind of understand the mindset and why he did what he did. It's it was a bit unfortunate, and it kind of hit close to home for Nora because again, David was somebody that they were all friends growing up,
right?
And it's never easy, but it's it was, I was surprised. It was neat to see. It was great to see it all play out. And then of course, Lum at the end would never hurt Mr. Charles because, you bet you,
you
set my brother up and now I have his girl. So there'd be no reason for me to be mad at Nick Charles
because
my
awesome.
Life is good. Yeah. Yeah.
You betcha.
But you know, Dancer didn't know that Phil and Polly were married. And that would have, you know, changed things up. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you had, not only did you have this murder mystery, but there was also the whole check forging thing and paying people off. And it's like, why would Dancer want to kill Robert? Because that would dry up that well. You know, listen, I was getting paid. There's no reason. If Polly could string him along for as long as he could, I wasn't looking to, kill the golden goose. So everybody kind of had a reason for their actions. They all had a plan. It just was unfortunate that they all kind of converged or unraveled and Nick was back in town to kind of help, Abrams fix it all up. But it was a blast. And then you end the movie on another train.
Yes.
Going back to the East Coast because we tried coming home to sleep. That didn't happen. Well, let's go back to New York. And in the third movie, Nora has to meet the colonel who has an appointment with the colonel because he's not the money manager, but he's involved in Myrna's life and her finances. And that, of course, there's another reason why I hate Long Island because that's where that's where some of that movie takes place. But
sorry,
you know, it's no, he's Jersey.
Oh, that's right. Long Island, you said. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I I don't like driving to Long Island. I'm not a Long Island fan. So, but no, I thought I think we'll probably watch Renee really likes The Thin Man Goes Home. She likes seeing him with the family.
I was going to say, what's the big reveal at the end of this movie there, Dap?
What Nora is, and we were talking about the twin beds too, and how did that happen? But, and as some detective he is, because while she's, after Cousin Norma retires to her train car, Nick is ready to finally go to bed and, is ready for Nora to come with him, but she's crocheting and, he's asking her, what are you knitting? And he's like, well, looks like a baby's booty. And she's just looking at him, waiting for him to catch on. And, I'm guessing maybe the martinis might have slowed him down a little bit, but he's thinking about it. And it's like light bulb goes off and, eventually we will be met with, we will meet little Nikki. Mm-hmm. Charles, and that was those, you know, when in the fourth movie in Shadow of the Thin Man, the Nick and little Nicky go for a walk, and it's great watching these two, because little Nicky wants a story to be told, and Nick is really in no mood to read the story because he wants to read the racing sheets. And he ends up turning the story into the horse betting. And that night they're having dinner and Nikki wants Daddy to drink milk and Nick's not having it, but he ends up having to drink the milk. It's just seeing the whole family kind of come together was neat. Cause normally, you know, it's the kiss of death on a lot of TV shows, but you might be worried about introducing a baby, mm-hmm. who eventually grows up to be a very small little boy who's able to talk and have their own scenes. You might worry that that's going to detract or dilute some of the magic between William Powell and Myrna Loy. And it really didn't. I thought and it's not like they hit you over the head with it. It's not like, you know, little Nikki's going to solve the crimes now or anything like that. It's just, they have a baby and the play, there's a scene in the third movie where, a bunch of ex-cons are coming over for a play date, bringing their babies. And, there's a little bit of a mishap, which could have been an entire movie by itself. When little Nikki is found missing, but it ends up being like, you know, a little 2 minute, it plays into how things end up as far as the movie goes, but it's not drawn out or there's no real, sense of dread over this missing baby. But yeah, no, this one after The Thin Man ends with the reveal of Nora is pregnant and, the family is growing.
I love the fact that I would be so nervous as a casting director because you do have to introduce someone that's going to work. You don't want to have a Jake Lloyd.
No, right? You didn't.
But so you got to introduce something to Powell and Loy and the kid has to be good.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that's also charming about the series is that you're allowed to watch them age. You know, like, yeah. The characters. Yeah,
the Song of the Thin Man is which is the sixth movie, their last movie in the series. But they definitely look older and a little bit more worn than they did when the series started.
Mm-hmm. I think that's nice. I mean, not everyone. I get that, you know, certain movies, especially like now with, you know, superhero films and such, you're trying to make sure that they're all young because you're trying to tell stories that happen fairly soon, one after another, and you don't want the actors to look too old, to where it's kind of unbelievable that they're still doing what they're doing on screen. But I like movies that allow sequels to and people that will actually age.
Yes,
you know, I think that that's nice. I mean, it's a thing where kids growing up watching Harry Potter aged with Harry Potter.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a thing that's where I remember when we did that discussion a long time ago, some of my friends that were talking about that film, they're like, well, you know, I grew up with this. And I'm like, well, I couldn't relate to that because I was already grown up when it came out. You know, and they're like, well, you know, I was, you know, this age and just a little bit older than him when the first book came out or the first movie came out or whatever. So anyway, this is a kind of a 30s example of something a little bit like that. So I do like that. Okay, so David, anything else about After the Thin Man or the Thin Man series or anything like that? People should check out Turner Classic Movies for sure to see if absolutely. They're playing them again.
They do. You'll see you'll see a few of the Thin Man movies pop up from time to time over the course of the year, but during I think it's August, Turner Classic has Summer Under the Stars, where every day for 24 hours during that month, one actor or actress is the spotlight of the day, and they will play however many movies of that actor or actress for 24 hours. So you'll end up, if William Powell or Myrna Loy are in the spotlight for that day, you will see movies with the two of them together, more often than not.
It was 16 of them total that they did together.
That they did together, yeah. And, 16, 14. There's definitely in double digits. The Thin Man series started in 1934, and Song of the Thin Man, the final movie, in the series was released in 1947. So that's a long time.
Yeah, I mentioned this earlier, but just think about, like, what's going on in the U.S. for that time. I mean, talk about a drastic change. I mean, you're coming out of the Depression and then going into World War II and then post-World War II. And I mean, there's a lot going on, but throughout that whole time, there's still the Thin Man series.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty remarkable. Well, I do want to say thank you to David for selecting this, because I really had a good time with, I think I've only seen the first four. I don't believe I've seen the last two yet. I think they're still on my DVR, actually. I'm probably getting in trouble for that because I think they're saved. So there's some things we maybe missed. So I should probably just get around to watching the last two. But no, I really enjoyed them. And I you know, it was one of those where I knew that it was famous for a reason, but it was one of those where, well, does that mean just because it's a famous movie, am I going to enjoy it? Do I have expectations? Is the film going to live up to it? Yada, yada, yada.
Oh, yeah.
But it definitely delivered, and I just could not get enough of the two of them just talking and just being in the same room together, which is absolutely fantastic, I thought. So that was very much a wise choice on your part, Mr.
Prince. Oh, thank you. Yes. Thank you.
So if people have any comments, suggestions, or movies that they would like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter. The handle is @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @EricWilliams79. We also have a Facebook page where you can like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, we do have a wedding coming up in July. So maybe if you wanted to buy some shit for me, that would be pretty fantastic. You could search over at Amazon for our wish list. It's full of movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole bunch of wedding stuff that maybe Anel's making me put on there. Just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So I do want to thank Mr. Price once again for coming on and discussing yet another film with me. If people wanted to hear more from you or get in contact with you, where could they do so?
I can be found on Twitter @DavidAPrice. I am on Facebook. We are on We, meaning 11 O'Clock Comics, has a... we have the forum, 1111oclockcomics.com. We have a Facebook group page. You can find me on Instagram. You can, there's Tumblr. I don't want to say you can search for David Price because you'll end up with a baseball pitcher or a congressman or a weatherman. So it's, you can, also bug Eric and he'll let you know where you can reach me too.
That's true. You are a very wealthy African American pitcher. That's how I know the name David Price is. It's all the, you know, you've been getting traded a few times recently, so you've been in the news a lot.
Yeah.
Made a whole lot of money this offseason.
I really should not bother having a Google alert because it's never for me.
That's probably true. And 11 o'clock comics is on Instagram recently, yes?
As of about 6 o'clock tonight, I decided what the hell. Now that with Instagram you can actually have you can have multiple accounts. I figured it'll be easy to maintain. That way it'll be easier than a mole blog. I'll just, you know, at the cons. Not that reception service is all that great in McCormick in Chicago, but right. I'll take pictures. We'll be able to upload them through Instagram, and with Instagram you can connect it to your Twitter. So 11 o'clock comics has a Twitter account, and therefore, you know, we're all just trying to stay connected.
There you go. You got to call it Insta, by the way, too. That's what the kids call it.
Well, I always thought it was like just IG, but then I'm afraid if you're ignoring people, I don't get it.
He'll say, Mr. Williams, do you have Insta? I don't know what you're saying.
Just right finish now. Your words, man. There's a whole, just, why are you short?
Oh, you mean that? Instagram? No, I know I don't.
It's one other syllable, dude. Just,
oh,
how much time are you saving?
Imagine reading papers these days.
I can't.
Oh my god. So thank you for listening.
We don't return to the grumpy old man yet.
That's right, yeah. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.
You walk into the room with your pencil in your hand. You see somebody naked. You say, who is that man? You try so hard, but you don't understand just what you will say when you get home. But there's something happening here, and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? So you hand in your ticket, and you go watch the geek, who immediately walks up to you when he hears you speak, and he says, well, how does it feel, my friend, to be such a freak? You say, impossible, as he hands you a book, and you're positive that something's happening here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? You have so many contacts out there among the lumberjacks to get you the faster someone attacks your imagination. No one has any respect. Anyway, they always expect you to just give a check to tax-deductible charity organizations. Well, you've been with the professor, and they all like your looks. And with great lawyers you have discuss lepers and crooks. You've been through all of F. Scott Fitzgerald's books. You're very well read, yeah, it's well known. Because something is still happening here. You don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Sword swallower, he comes up to you and then he kneels. He crosses himself and then he clicks his high heels. Without further notice, he tells you how it feels, and he says,